Hey up, my name's Ben, and you're listening to File 30 of the YYY Files. This file belongs to someone who I know has a lot to say about Stoke City, who I know has a lot of interesting stories to tell, and who has been through the ups and downs like we all have. How do I know all this? Well, he's been one of my closest friends for the last decade. I'm in an unusual position, really, where I know a lot about him already, but I've got a feeling that there's even more that we'll find out today. Zach Deakin, how are you, mate?
Good, thanks, mate. Thanks for having us.
Good to have you. How are you? Okay?
Yeah, not too bad. Just getting used to lockdown and work from home and, no football to talk about, although I have a feeling that might be changing relatively soon, hopefully.
Yes, we're getting there. I'm assuming we'll hear episodes of Wizards of Drivel at some point soon.
Yes.
But for now, all of them guys are going to have to make do with listening to this, right?
I'm happy to stand in.
Yeah, exactly. Lockdown life continues, but we press on regardless. Luckily, we don't have to deal with current events in football, and we just rely on people like you.
Well, yeah, I think, especially the last few years, I'd rather go back in history at the moment anyway.
Yeah. One of the main reasons why I started up, Stoke were doing a... They weren't so good, were they? So I thought, you know what? I'm fed up with talking about Stoke in a set away every week. It's nice to be able to talk about them in a good light for a change.
Yeah, no, that sounds sensible.
Anyway, so for those of you that don't know, the YYY files are Stoke City stories and they're told by you. Without people like Zach, the files just couldn't be possible. That's why I'm asking for you to share your story too. If you want to appear on the show, like Zach, and create your file, head to the website and click Create Your File. That's the YYYFiles.com, or on all social media at the YYYFiles, or email the YYYFiles@mail.com. All those links are in the podcast description. So, mate, this is a bit weird, really, because I actually know you and I've known you for a long time, so this isn't like a... I'm going to know a lot of this already, but that's okay. But actually, I don't think I do know the answer to this first question, really. Why are you a Stoke fan? And I want to know from the beginning.
No, you probably don't. It's a fairly interesting story in terms of it could have gone differently and different ways, I suppose. I never went to Stoke that much as a kid. I think a lot of my family had just fallen out of love with it a little bit. I know they probably found the period before I was born a bit bleak as a Stoke fan. So no, it wasn't really a big deal in my house. In fact, probably more in terms of football influences were my uncle, who was a Man United fan, and I think tried to push us all that way. And, you know, without going to games and like easy access to watching Stoke, didn't really become that fanatical about it, like you say, in terms of the Premier League was the only thing on TV, really, that you'd watch. And I suppose becoming a Stoke fan didn't happen until kind of early teens, really, where I suppose started having the ability to earn some of my own kind of money doing chores or little Saturday jobs to pick my first season ticket. I was pretty determined. I was a big football fan without necessarily having a team to invest it in. But I decided to start going down to Stoke, and luckily enough, I had some family friends that had season tickets.
Okay.
So I kind of tagged myself on to them. They were very kind enough to take me and every game and buy me beers at the football. And that kind of just kick-started it. And I think there was no going back then, really, in terms of... You have that whole other side to football, don't you? In terms of it wasn't just watching the 90 minutes. It was the whole kind of getting there before and the programme and the pie, going out into that kind of atmosphere, which, you know, especially at that time, kind of first years back in the Premier League were just special. Even if the game wasn't particularly anything to marvel about, it was just a great day out. From then on, really, fanatical about it.
You said you were a fan of football initially. Was that just the Premier League watching them on telly? Was it the World Cup? Or was it playing football? What was it initially before Stoke, man?
It was everything, really. Probably like most kids, really. Wanted to play it all the time. And when you weren't playing it, you were watching it. But without ever really going to many games at all. Which I suppose is strange. But yeah, that's all I was interested in as a kid, really.
And then you said your uncle tried to persuade you to go down to Man United.
Well, yeah, but some of my first games would have been at Old Trafford.
Mm.
Yeah, and I used to watch them. They probably were my team in terms of watching them on the TV.
Mm.
But like I say, you know, it doesn't compare when you get that experience of actually going to a game week in, week out, kind of like I say, and all the kind of things that go with it and around it. Yeah, it's just, there was no decision to make, was there really?
Well, was that it? Was that why you didn't become a Man United fan, in a sense, because you just weren't going regularly?
Yeah, yeah, no, certainly. I think a lot of kids get it in terms of, you know, the big sides are the ones that dominate the TV and dominate the playground and things. So I suppose it's easy for kids to go in the wrong direction, let's say. But yeah, as soon as you start, as soon as you actually have that match daying experience, it just blows it out of the park, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll admit, when I was younger, I wouldn't go as far to say I was a Man United fan. I was a bit of a David Beckham fan, I guess.
Yeah,
like, irrationally.
Yeah. I think that was a major influence on a lot of people, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you still get people now who are England fans rather than necessarily club fans, just because of Beckham as well.
Well, it's amazing how much sometimes these footballers, considering you know nothing about football, could be massive role models on people's lives. Like, I remember having David Beckham annuals when I was a kid and Man United badges with his name on, not like definitely not for Man United, I didn't really care. And then when he left and went to Real Madrid, of course his sort of press coverage wasn't as big over here when he left and went on to those other clubs like Milan and Galaxy and PSG. I really wasn't interested in football at that point, but I'll have had United memorabilia as well,
hidden away
at some point. I'll be ashamed to admit it, but there's nothing like sort of going down to that first game, as you say. And for you, it wasn't just a first game; it was a season ticket. What on earth made you think, okay, like, I'm gonna get a season ticket, and it's for Stoke without any sort of connection to them beforehand?
Yeah, well, I think like I said, my granddad and my dad were Stoke fans, but just not. They didn't really talk about it that much growing up. Like I say, I don't know what happened or where things went wrong. It was watching the scenes actually on Sky Sports of promotion, and just seeing like how excited people got and how much it meant to people, like I say, family included, that I'd never seen get excited about a football team before. And it was kind of gripping. It was really electric. And I decided then that I was going to get a ticket and go, and whatever it took, really. Yeah, and I haven't looked back. Still season ticket holder now.
Well, that's it, yeah. Like, I don't think you've missed many games, really, because, like, I'm sure we'll come on to this later, but you've even moved away for uni and for work, and yet you've not lost your touch with Stoke, and it's the same for me, really. Like, once you go, some people are just hooked on it, aren't they?
Yeah, no, so I started going with family and friends, because even that, I don't know why particularly, but even that wasn't enough to kind of push family back into going, just at that point. But so I went with family friends, and then a year or two later, my dad and brother also got a ticket, so we were kind of reunited.
So what was the first season for you then? Was that the first season back in the Premier League? Because you said it was early teens, and I know
we're
the same age, it's going to be around the same time. I think I was the middle of the 2009-10 season.
Yeah, no, it was that first year in the Premier League, which was just crazy, wasn't it?
Oh, well, yeah.
So my first match as a season ticket holder was Villa. And we actually left early, so you didn't see the... I know. God bless my family friends. They were brilliant to me, but pulling us away from the match at the 83rd minute.
Oh, how?
Yeah, on that particular day was a bit gutting.
I was going to say, because it's not a bad game to start you off, really. You know, your first live game as a Stoke fan, and you missed the good bit.
it was crazy, really. It was a good game, and I think the goal actually happened. We had it on the radio as we were leaving the ground, and I'm pretty sure the goal went in between me getting out of the car and into the house. And I don't think I quite believed that we'd actually scored the winner. I don't think I'd even heard it on the radio, and I'd missed it in person, so mixed memories of that one.
I was going to say, well, what I normally ask, sorry, is what made you go back? But, I mean, for you, you had a season ticket, you were hooked into it.
It was crazy, really. You know, I remember, especially that first year, you'd know you'd been to the Stoke game for the next kind of few hours, really. The ears ringing and just the kind of intensity and, the atmosphere had made it, really. You had to get back there.
That first season staying up, nobody expected it. The city didn't expect it. The club didn't expect it. I think deep down, of course, they pushed for it, and sort of Pulis with his motivational speeches, putting posters on the wall and using Paddy Power as a weapon for driving his players on, and it was a massive surprise to everybody. But
I genuinely don't remember it being. I don't remember it even being close or even being.
We did well, didn't we?
I know. It was obviously after the Bolton game, the first game. It was everyone had
sour
expectation in their mind, but. Even now, you know, you watch back, I think the club put the season DVD onto YouTube, And you still hear the commentators talking after Christmas. Well, I can't remember. It must have been like, you know, around Easter time. And they're still talking about getting this goal to you know, ensure survival. And it was like, well, I never remember it being that close. I always thought we were pretty comfortable. I might have missed... Well, our home form was pretty good, so I probably... let that impact that judgment.
It was quite strange because I've watched that the season review back as well, and I don't think that we were ever close to the bottom position wise. I think it was quite a tight league table. I think we were a couple of wins away from being down there at one point, but yeah, position wise we were sort of pushing top half and stuff like that, and we finished the season with a flourish as well, really. And
yeah,
it wasn't as if it was Survival Sunday on the last day for anything. We didn't have much to play for on the last day. I think I can't remember what game Lawrence scored that
was
goal.
Was it Hull?
Yeah, something like that. And that's the goal that people say that ensured us to stay up. But after that, it was, didn't care, did we? At that point, it was done. It was quite simple, really.
Yeah, I'm sure we can say that in hindsight.
Well,
we might have had a different view at the time.
Yeah, I think we've seen teams who have done so well, even in recent Premier League seasons, that have been up to fourth place at the very start of the season. And then was it Hull again who were like fourth place at the start of the season at one point and then ended up getting relegated? Like, it's possible.
It's a Barmy League.
Needs a bad run of form. And
no doubt. And we just managed to keep that confidence and momentum just at the right level all the way through the season, I think. And actually, I just think it just helped, I think, the whole season in terms of just cementing that kind of feeling for the club. I'll probably, like you say, we'll go on to this later, but in terms of like the identity of it, it felt like backs against the wall, odds against the world kind of feeling. And it, you know, you couldn't help but get drawn in by it.
Yeah, well, it really was, because like we were away from the top flight for a long time, and you know, some teams come up like a Huddersfield at times people were rooting for, and Bournemouth they were rooting for, and Southampton they were rooting for, Stoke no chance, everybody hated us.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right, it could have gone a really different way, but the way that we were portrayed set us off for our entire time in the Premier League. So many teams were happy to see us go down by the end of it.
Yeah, but I still don't buy it. It's probably another point in terms of you know, passionate Hull beliefs in terms of within football. I just don't buy the narratives around us at that time. I think when you look back, we played some really decent stuff. Like,
yeah,
I don't think you can name many teams that come up to the Premier League and play, you know, the way we did with two wingers and two forwards a lot of the time.
And beating good teams as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that was part of it. Just going at teams. Yes, we got the ball forward quickly, but it was good football, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, yeah, like some of the goals that Fuller scored, Lawrence scored, Etherington then came in and maybe helped us to stay up, but he was phenomenal, really.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of wingers at that point, Lawrence and Etherington, maybe going on a bit further, sort of Pennington, Etherington, some of the best out-and-out wingers. You could, like, there's been loads of wingers since that are decent, that are basically inside forwards, but in terms of two out-and-out wingers, Stoke have been one of the main clubs for that, really, I think, in the last few years.
We've been lucky.
Yeah, we have.
I'm sure we'll get onto that with the Dream Files 11.
Yeah. But then, so we stayed up in that first season, and you stayed on as well. You got another season ticket then.
Yeah, kept it rolling. Once you started going regularly to games and experiencing that every week, and the friends you make around it as well. Like I say, I was very lucky, really. Family friends were very good to me. Made some friends as well whilst I was up there, and the West Upper Stand at the bar and things. Yeah, definitely made some great friends, which I suppose we'll go on to this later in terms of staying involved. You know, it became more about the people and the match going routine, more than the football itself.
Well, I mean, we can talk about that now. How did those relationships grow? Because you said, like, at the time your other parts of your family weren't going. I know you were going with other members of your family, maybe a little bit more distant than your dad or something.
Friends, yeah.
So how did those relationships grow?
So we used to get to the games quite early. Like I say, it was because it was all about that pie before, that beer before, catching up with people that you hadn't seen in a while. And like I said, that became the main focus of match day, really. Yeah, I stay in touch with a lot of them now, even now, in terms of, you know, people I wasn't friends with before, in terms I didn't know before.
And I think that this is what a lot of people don't understand about football, that don't like football. Like, they say, well, why do you go every week? How on earth do you spend all this money? Well, it's more than the 90 minutes, isn't it? I think we've said that a lot on this podcast. It is the day out, and it is what you make of it sometimes. The club can put everything on in the world, and some people still will only turn up for the match. But
Well, exactly now, and it's like that now. I obviously live in Manchester, don't get to go back like all that often, but you know, match days for me is it's going back, seeing friends like yourself on the Friday before, you know, going to the pub, then on the Saturday, you know, meeting up with family, my going down to the game with my granddad and my auntie and dad and brother and things. It's just always kept you grounded, kept you coming back. It's just that thing we do together, which is why it's still, I can't get away from it, even if the football's been dire.
That's the thing, it's what you make of it, isn't it? Like, I'm sure that people that have always gone just for the 90 minutes, maybe they've gone on their own or something, or maybe they've gone to someone with they actually particularly don't like, then of course it's much easier for them to stay away. But even when Stoke were doing badly, when we were getting relegated and not doing well in the Championship, people are still going. I was surprised, actually, of how many we managed to hold on to as we went down, because I know that we were getting close to sort of 27,000-30,000 at the end of the Premier League era, and then initially we only dropped to sort of 20,000-25,000, and that actually wasn't too bad. And again, it's because people just love it so much around here, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Any special memories from those early days following Stoke?
Well, there's quite a few, but I think you've got to go with those Arsenal games. Like I say, they just encapsulated everything that was brilliant about those first few years. Just all the club was just always up for it with those games, and it just became that. I don't even remember it developing into a grudge match. I just remember it being a grudge match from the very beginning, which is weird, I suppose, because, you know, normally these kind of things, they take a lot of building up to. I don't know if it's in the history of the club, because I know there was obviously famous games back in the 70s with Arsenal, but I suppose it was just, well, we were the Antichrist, weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
And it was like that from the first game, and just doing them over. You know, probably the first big scalp that we got at the Brit that year. It was just special. I think was it 2-1 the first game? I seem to remember neither were very good goals, but
I think it was Oliver Njani's nipple or something, wasn't it? Or
Well, I think that added to it, just because you could see it wound them up.
Well, yeah,
there was a lot of good memories those first few years. I think the Man City with 10 men, that was, I seem to remember, that was pretty special atmosphere wise as well.
So moving on a little bit then. So one of the reasons why we're on the show together at the moment is because, as I said at the start, we've known each other for a decade now, probably.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
For those who are listening, we were at school together, me and Zach. We didn't really, I would say, know each other very well in the first few years of school. I don't know what happened.
No, I think we were in different year sets.
Yeah, they split us down the middle, didn't they, or something?
Yeah, but then I think other people brought us together.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's it. And other people did bring us together, and I remember. The inside joke between us two is business studies, and we used to have a sort of block day out for the same lesson of business studies, and me, Zach, and a couple of other of our friends would spend a whole day together in the same room almost. And then, mentioned a couple of times on the podcast before, I became a Stoke fan sort of 2009-ish, and I was just starting to learn about Stoke at that point. I knew nothing about football at all. I probably knew even less than Zach did. Zach had been going for a year or so before me and had other people sort of talking to him about it. I went with my dad, who wasn't really a football fan either, and we were both learning together.
Yeah.
Zach was going to every game. And then me and Zach sort of started talking about school, and I remember distinctively from my point of view, like, you were sort of educating me about Stoke.
I can't say I don't think I've ever educated anyone on
influencing me, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that'll say a lot then, if I've educated you about Stoke.
You've done too badly, to be fair. But yeah, that's it. Like, I remember it being us in class together, but I can only speak for myself, and I don't know whether you say the same thing. It was probably football that brought us both together at that point.
No, definitely. I think we've kept that, haven't we?
Yeah.
I know my first proper away day experience was with you, Ben, on a road trip to Liverpool, and we kind of continued that still to this day. So I don't think you. I think without, like I said, the friends you make around it, I don't think it's very difficult to keep the enthusiasm going. Whereas, like I say, I think we both played a part in us still following them now.
Yeah, we probably did, because, I mean, I was sort of playing catch-up at that point, so I was very enthusiastic about learning more. I'd never played football either, really. I played a little bit in primary school, but I was no good. I was always stuck in the sticks. And then...
Are you not still stuck in the sticks, Ben?
I'm still stuck in the sticks, but I don't mind being stuck in the sticks, to be fair. I'm actually quite good at it now, I like to think. I venture out sometimes now I've had my back surgery. I feel like I'm a bit sharper now. I'm not running around like an old man, but some people might have other opinions on that, to be fair. But I've always been quicker than you, though, so I'll take that.
Okay, I mean, that's not a very exclusive club.
Oh, dear. But yeah, like just sort of talking about sort of building relationships together, like not only we were talking about Stoke, I remember sort of playing football after school for the first time ever. And for me back at the time, I was a swimmer. So as Zach knows, maybe some of you know as well listening, like I used to swim in the mornings before school. I used to swim in the evenings after school, on weekends. I used to perform in swimming galas that took all day and I was really into that. And then as I started talking to Zach and going to more Stoke games and playing football a bit more, and of course sort of school life hits you, social life hits you as well, I remember distinctively thinking swimming wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. It was definitely more of a football thing I was interested in. So I guess anyway,
is that a long-winded way of blaming me for the end of your swimming career?
You're absolutely responsible for the reason I never made the London 2012 Olympics.
The London Olympics,
absolutely your fault. but no, in all seriousness, I think it really was. I don't know if I'd have been so close to Soak, could it not been for the friendship that we had? I mean, as I say, my dad wasn't much of a football fan. We were going to games, but I was the one pestering him to go. Mm. And I think one of the reasons why I was pestering for him to go was because I had you to talk to about football.
Thanks for that, Ben.
I don't know how that was with you, like whether you'd have kept going anyway. I'm assuming you would, because you, like you said, you had the match day experience, the regular match day experience of going down with your friends and family friends and things like that.
Yeah, I probably undoubtedly would have done, but it wouldn't have been the same experience, would it? Like you say, in terms of having those friendships around it, especially going into a school on a Monday and talking about it. Or, you know, looking forward to it on a Friday. And I know we did have a lot of time to kill in business studies.
Well, we did, because we were quite good at business studies, so we finished our work with an half a day. There's an ambulance going by. Hello, everyone.
Sorry, just intervening within the podcast there.
Podcasting at its finest. I'm having that as a blooper for when we do the anniversary special next summer. Oh, good job. But yeah, you touched on it there, actually. So one of the things that I think really did bring us together was I didn't really do away days. And yeah, my first away day was with you. You mentioned Liverpool. I don't know whether that was the first or not, because remember.
No, I'm wrong. I'm thinking the first league away day.
Because I remember going to Birmingham, sitting in the cup, and it was 4-4 that night, wasn't it? Or something like that, or 5-5, like we took them to penalties in the end, or something like that.
Yeah, no, it was 4-4 at the end of that night, and I think we beat them on penalties reasonably comfortably in the end, but and that was a crazy game, I think.
Yeah, it really was a crazy game.
They had 10 men, I'm pretty sure, throughout most of extra time, and I think...
Yeah, something happened, like, we were 3-1 up and sort of cruising, really, and then they come back at 3-3, I think, before the end of full time, and then
yeah,
a goal apiece in added time, like... We did it the hard way, didn't we?
I mean, that was, I think, an illuminating first away day.
Yes.
I'm not sure we've got that much better at keeping a clean sheet away from home. So even against 10 men.
But there was something about that away day for me. It was just completely different to anything I've been to before, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't just the fact that it wasn't at the Britannia Stadium. It wasn't even the fact that it was in a completely different place. I remember I bought a Blues programme and had...
Yeah.
Sort of food from Morrison's because we didn't know what we were doing and didn't know where we were, but it was the fact that it was with you, a friend, rather than with my family. I think it was a completely different experience.
It was a new chapter, wasn't it? I suppose sort of something as well. Around what would we have been, first year of sixth form potentially.
Yeah.
No, I think the same actually.
First signs of independence, I think, for me at that time. Like definitely. That's, I don't know, what is it about away days? A lot of people say like away days are always better. What is it?
I don't know, but it can't be the football because I think, did we start counting last year about how many wins we'd actually seen in all the away games we'd been to?
Oh, I don't think I've seen one.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle.
Yeah, it really is. We've always been bad away from home. You mentioned that first season, we relied on our home form to stay up in that first season of the Premier League. Can you imagine if we'd have gone then?
I know. So, yeah, but I do think it's, for me, I suppose, it's different because with the home games, it's, like I say, I go back and meet up with family and we go to the games together with granddad and my dad and brother and things. But I suppose away games, it's, you know, you're with your mates, you know, you're all together. You can, especially like for me, I obviously live in Manchester, kind of away from, you know, old school friends and things. So we can put a date in the diary at least for a couple of times a year and say, well, no, we're all going to meet here and
exactly,
and make a real day of it or weekend of it even at some occasions. So yeah, definitely. There is something different and distinct about them, and it's certainly not winning them.
Well, especially being a Stoke City fan anyway. But maybe you've hit the nail on the head there, actually. Like, it is about putting a date in the diary and making a day of it, because with a season ticket, it's quite... You can even miss some with a season ticket. You said living in Manchester, like, I've been guilty of this as well. Like, when I moved away, I've missed games just because I've not fancied it or I'm not able to, but when it's an away game, you have to make the day of it because you're actually going somewhere. You've got to travel somewhere, whether that's the day or night before, and then you come home the day or night after, or even if it's the same day, it's a big, long day doing a travelling, especially if we go further than the Midlands or the start of the North, where we've normally gone to games.
Yeah.
But think back to the away games that we've been to. You mentioned Liverpool, we've done that. Hull, I remember doing that as well, when Tom Huddleston basically ate Bojan. I remember that and getting knocked so far off the ball. I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh, he's going to get destroyed in this league. Oh,
was that against 10 men as well?
I don't know.
I seem to remember we grabbed a late equaliser.
Yeah, I know it was 1-1, but that's all I remember about that game. Yeah. I'm not even convinced which season it was. Well, I guess it was Bojan's debut, I think. So it was probably Hughes' second season or something like that, it would have been. But yeah, I remember that. I know we've been to West Brom in last season, I think that was, wasn't it?
That was a lovely birthday present for you, wasn't it?
Oh, it was it was my birthday actually that day.
What was the final
score
that day? I think it might have been a 2-1 thrash. It's like 2-0 thrashing, or
Peter scored a belter, didn't he?
Oh yeah.
Peter scored one from like it wasn't even a cross. He just lumped one in the 90th minute towards goal, and it flew in. I don't know if it was 3-1, it was definitely something to one, and we definitely lost quite comprehensively, considering that at that time we thought that the Stoke was still going up. We definitely weren't in hindsight, But then, even like you said, Stoke have never been very good away, or it's been very rare that we have anyway. When we win away, it's definitely a bonus. But that day for me was so good because we went on the coach, and a lot of people have a lot to say about the coach. But the free coach, I think, is fine for what it is. Like, especially for young people like us, definitely when we were first going, that whole game particularly, we probably wouldn't have gone to Hull if it wasn't for that free away travel, I don't think.
No, I agree, and I think... I know a lot of people that have, you know, had their first experience of away days via that I don't think probably would have gone to that many beforehand. So again, that's probably credit to the club.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Again, especially it must be a hard thing to sell to most people. Like, do you fancy 3-hour coach ride to watch Hull?
No, we don't.
But it was just a great memory. Great memories.
Yeah, that's it. And it's worth the journey. Like, those games that we've lost, and we've lost pretty much everyone that we've been to together, I'm sure, but it really doesn't matter. Like, we've been with different people each time, and there's just something about the day out, like, whether it is in the bar or pub before, whether it is just sort of the travelling together. Because we're travelling together, you've got no option but to sort of sit and talk to each other. There's such a sort of culture these days when you go out to bar to sit on your phone or something, or...
Are you saying you'd only talk to me if you are confined onto a coach?
Are you saying that we do anyway? Even when we're playing pro clubs during lockdown, we're shouting at each other. You said it's that date in the diary, and that's it for me. That's what away days are. Some people say it's more passionate fans, and I guess, somewhat maybe.
And there's an element to that, isn't there?
Of course there is. Like,
especially as that kind of, that home atmosphere is subsidised a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two different experiences, but both good.
We've been to home games before. I can remember we have. Yes, it's a different experience, but there's something about going with someone you've not seen in a while. And do you think that... this is going to get deep now. Sorry, mate. Do you think we'd have been such close friends had it not been for Stoke?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Difficult question. I'm sure we'd probably have found other mutual interests. I think we were both falling in love with Stoke at around the same time.
Yeah.
And there was that, I think, you know, having each other to talk about it with and experience it with. Yeah, it's probably been a big part of our friendship.
I think so. I mean, you said before that there's been other factors as to why we were friends in the first place. We mentioned business studies and sort of social circles bringing us together as well. But,
yeah.
I mean, in terms of days out...
they play a big role, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And memories happen that aren't football-related on those days out as well. And you make other plans based off going off that. And, well,
yeah.
I know for a fact that we've done... we've been on holidays just because the football's on. And... and that actually leads us onto a nice segue, really. So, well, I mean, it might not. This might come under worst memories, to be fair. Best memories following Stoke, then?
Obviously, there's a lot to choose from.
Yes.
For different reasons, like you say. I mean, you've got to have your Wembleys in there, just as occasions where, fortunately, the semi-final was actually about football. we can talk about how good we were that day, but you know, seeing the excitement in the city and just the amount of people that made that journey. I mean, I'm yet to actually speak to somebody who was in Stoke that day in terms of stayed behind. So I have no idea what it must have been like that day. It's been a really weird atmosphere in the city because it just felt like every single Stoke fan was down on the way to Wembley. So you'd have to have them. There are lots. So I mentioned the Arsenal games before. And I'm not sure I could pick a specific occasion of beating Arsenal to be my favourite.
They're all good enough, aren't they?
Yeah, I enjoyed them all. I still enjoy them. I think, like you alluded to before, the away days, particularly. I know we went over to St. Pauli and
for a
weekend to watch that friendly, and that was an experience not particularly enjoyable for myself.
Well, I was going to say, like, quite a lot happened on this trip. Do you want to, like, I don't want to lecture, so for the sake of everyone else listening, do you want to sort of? Because I know what happened, I can fact check this. So do you want to sort of talk us through what happened with that trip?
I mean, where to start, really?
Like, how did it happen? I know how it happened, obviously, but...
Yeah, well, I think the partnership had been announced, hadn't it? And I don't know if it was you or me that done a bit of Googling and found cheap flights, and it fell on the same day as my girlfriend's birthday. So I'd suggested it as a weekend away to Hamburg. You know, first time we'd been abroad together, actually. So I think I got the agreement and said, well, yeah, Stoke are going to be playing at the same time. And she was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll probably get more out of it than I'll lose if I only have to watch 90 minutes of the game and stuff. And then I don't quite know how I got away with this, but I broke the idea that you should come too. Yeah, you ended up staying in the same room, didn't you? At the foot of our bed. So it was a lovely romantic weekend away, the three of us.
when you say the foot on the bed, I just want to make this clear. I didn't kill off at the end of your actual bed. There was like a sofa bed at the end of the room that they must have squeezed in for us. I wasn't actually sort of completely third wheeling. I don't know. Why didn't we get separate rooms at that point? I really don't remember. Well, because it's you, isn't it? It's cheaper.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's the student. We split it three ways. So it was But I mean, the experience was...
Well, just getting out there in the first place was a bit of an experience.
Oh, God, the flights were a nightmare. I mean, do you know where they actually flew us to? Because I still have no idea to this day.
We were supposed to go to Hamburg Airport. We were going from... Where did we go from? Manchester, didn't we?
Yeah, Manchester, yeah.
So we were supposed to go from Manchester to Hamburg. However, and there might be some other fans listening to this, actually, who had the same thing happen to them. Our flight was delayed by... I think the typical 2 hours, 59 minutes, so that, they don't have to pay us compensation. And it was a late flight. It was supposed to be around sort of 9:30 anyway. But they delayed us to a point where we weren't due to arrive in Hamburg until past midnight. And Hamburg Airport shuts at midnight. So instead of flying
us to Hamburg... I still don't understand. How does an airport shut at midnight?
I don't know. Like, I guess because it's such a small airport. Because I know Hanover's quite a big airport for Germany, and Hamburg's only sort of like a Liverpool-type airport or something like that. It's not very big.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd slept on the plane, but I don't think I was fully aware of the fact that we weren't landing into Hamburg until
Oh, no, you weren't. No, it was just me and Fran who were aware, I think, at that point.
Till we'd got off the plane.
We got off?
We were absolutely nowhere near Hamburg and had to take a 5-hour
It took so long.
Yeah, they didn't even offer us a water, did they?
No, because we were stood there. We had to have our passports checked at Hanover, I think, still. And they put us in this sort of little sort of quarantine room, sort of very slowly filtering us through. And I remember you were absolutely, as you always are, busting for a piss. And they didn't let us go. Like, I know that we were coming into a country and having our passports checked, but flipping heck, let us go to the toilet, lads. Bloody.
Yeah. And that set the tone, didn't it, Robert?
Yeah, pretty much.
I woke up the next day with a horrible illness. Still don't quite know what it was, but
no.
Just spent the next 24 hours violently vomiting. So in the end, it was good that we brought you along, really, because at least Fran had some company.
Yes, good point. I don't know how far you'd have made it otherwise, because I sort of dragged you over to the game because you weren't convinced you were going to go. And I was like, no, come on, we're going. We've got the tickets. This is the only time we're ever going to be doing this. We're going. And it's fine. Within the first 5 minutes, we found your Starbucks, got your coffee, and you were well on your way.
Yeah.
Well, somewhat anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if I saw very much of the game between running to the toilets. But,
no. But I tell you what an amazing trip that was, though, to be fair. Like, Hamburg, I think it's lovely. Sort of very similar to Liverpool. Had a lot going on. They had the carnival there. I remember us watching the light show as well in the evening. Like, Hamburg itself is quite nice.
Yeah, it was a great city. It was a great time. Luckily, I recovered for the second day, so I managed to get some enjoyment out of it. It was brilliant. It's just a shame that that partnership didn't really come to anything at all.
It'll be a weird
chapter in our histories, I think.
Well, I guess, like, we saw them as a benefit because I think they said initially it was for merchandise and stuff, so we were supposed to, I don't know, like, they teach us how to sell more sort of sportswear or Stoke City wear, because... Bit of a rant. I don't know if you've seen in our club shop, our apparel is terrible. For the stuff that isn't like our, like our kits. Yeah, our fashion line is absolutely dreadful. I don't know why they picked up on that.
They've got loads of it, though. I don't understand how they get rid of it.
No, I don't either. Like, and they keep making new stuff each year. It's not as if they recycle the same stuff. They keep making new stuff, and I think, well, make something good. Like, I remember walking into sort of the St. Pauli shop, and I bought a shirt. I remember, like, it wasn't even a kit. It was just a brown shirt with a St. Pauli logo on, but I thought it was really nice.
Yeah.
Wouldn't ever wear a brown shirt normally. But they got it right, you know, like, they had the free beer down there. The whole culture around the pub's quite nice as well. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, Peter Coates and... Was it Peter Coates and Tony Scholes that came down to...
Have
a beer with us? And I mean, like you say, we'll probably cover this, and we probably will cover it in terms of... I just don't think you get many clubs that would do things like that. And
no.
They brought a lot of goodwill with that kind of those kind of gestures. I think it was nice for the fans that travelled over to get their pictures with Peter. It was a special day.
It really was, and like for me, that's one of the best trips I think I've had. And then you said you enjoyed it as well. And even, you know, your girlfriend, like I know from speaking to her, like it sounds mad, the idea at first, that you're supposed to be going away for a birthday weekend together, dragging me along watching the football. But I actually remember her saying that she enjoyed the trip. And it's amazing how much football and stuff can rub off on people, in a way. Like, I know it wasn't directly football, but, I mean, it helps, doesn't it?
She always enjoys it in the end. Yeah. There's a lot of moaning about going to the football, but, like I said, I think she buys into the idea of, you know, the experiences around it and stuff as well. And obviously... Yeah. You know, you're a friend of the both of us now.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. And we watched Liverpool at Anfield together, and I'm pretty sure we must have been down Stoke together as well. Well, we definitely met in Stoke at some point. Oh, that was when, just after I had my surgery. I was sat in the the disabled bit, I remember, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You come over and said hello. I hated that experience so much. Not meeting you, obviously, the bit in the wheelchair.
I can imagine, yeah.
Oh, man. No, but to be fair, I got to give props to Stoke. They were really accommodating, actually. Give me a wheelchair pass. It was free to swap my seat to there, and they give me a parking pass to park right outside the ground as well. Just sort of drop that in. Stoke doing good things again. they're just sort of goodwill again. And
That's good. It's good for people to know, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, no, they are good. They're really good at, like you've got any sort of need or something that needs accommodating at a game. The matchday staff, to be fair, if you ask them, they aren't always the most proactive down there, I think, at the Britannia Stadium, Bet365 Stadium. I think sometimes it is push comes to shove with, like, card machines and stuff, but I think they are very reactive. Like, if you ask them to do something for me, they're fantastic. And
Yeah, good.
You touched on it before. Like, we are a good club, really.
No, definitely. You can sometimes frustrate at them, but I think their intentions are normally in the right place.
100%. I just want to move this on just a tad. So you said there about sort of meeting Skulls and Coates at St. Pauli, but I know you've met many more people than that during your time at Stoke.
Yeah, I've always been very fortunate, very lucky. Like I say, I started going to Stoke with friends of the family, and they were quite heavily involved in the Sir Stanley Matthews Foundation. So through that, I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of players and managers, past and present. I mean, the big one is obviously Gordon.
Mm.
Obviously, we sadly lost him last year, but I've got to meet him quite a few times, and such a lovely man. I know, I think you've met him as well, Ben.
Yeah.
But just got the time for everybody, and never gets bored of telling his stories, even if he might have told you on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
Really special man. I mean, I think the first time I met him was, I don't know if you went to the Palais versus Banksy.
I didn't know.
Tribute match at the Britannia, which was a kind of weird experience, especially, like I say, me being not that too familiar with Stoke at the time, and just having the idea that, you know, Palais was turning up to the to the Britannia Stadium. It was crazy. And yeah, we've got quite close to him, in terms of him coming up the stairs and saying hello to everybody and shaking hands and things with Gordon by his side. And I think that's when you sit back and you go, wow, like, just how big of a legend like Gordon was, like, in terms of, like, he had the power to kind of attract someone like Palais to come to a charity match in Stoke.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy. Always been very fortunate. Gone to lots of the dinners with the 7-2 team, and they're all in the model of Gordon, really, in terms of just having the time for everybody and you know, never getting bored of telling the stories, even if it might be the 100th time that night. So yeah, some great memories there.
Yeah, memories that other people won't have. Like, I remember, I think it was at one of those dinners you mentioned, actually, so the only piece of signed memorabilia I think I have from any Stoke player at the time, it was definitely my first, I think. I remember there was a Norwich team sheet that Mark Hughes, I think you had signed for me, and Eddie is first team coach, and Mark Bowen was on there I think.
Yeah, we got to, they sat on our table at one of the dinners that the management team did, guest speakers, and they were all really, really stand-up gents, especially Eddie, can't pronounce his surname, and I'm not even going to attempt it.
That's
on,
why I tried to avoid it, yeah.
he was a top-class bloke. Again, I just had the time to talk through it. Might have asked some really annoying questions at the time, being obviously a massive Stoke fan, and plenty of opinions on how we should be playing.
And you're not afraid to say them, are you?
No. So yeah, always had good experiences in terms of meeting your icons. Never really had a bad one, which I suppose I'm quite fortunate in.
I remember something, actually, about, as I say, you gave me that Mark Hughes team sheet on I think it was against Norwich that game. And I remember you telling me something about that game, and I don't know whether you remember it yourself, but I do if you can't.
Yeah, we'd been match sponsors for that Norwich match, and we'd been awful. It was a dreadful game, and I think we'd come to the end of the match, and they tried to ask us who man of the match should be. I think it's still up there with one of the hardest decisions we've ever had to make, because they were all awful. And I think we had asked if we could just give it to a Norwich player, but we'd not been allowed. I don't know in the end if it just got a friend I was with, particularly like Jeff Cameron, so I think he got one of the match just so we could meet him.
Yeah.
But it was a struggle.
Yeah, you've been a lucky boy, to be fair. You've been
lucky, yeah. And again,
some decent access in boxes and dinners and all this. Like,
yeah, very lucky. And again, I'd I probably should shout them out, actually. Joe, Rob, Stuart, and Sam, who I went to the football with for a long time, and really good friends to me and my family as well. So always been very, very lucky.
I believe that I've met a couple of them as well before, and yeah, fair play, like, lovely people, and to be able to give you opportunities like that is really nice, So let's move on then a little bit to the Fowls FC then.
Yeah.
So, Zach, this is your ultimate Stoke team of past and present. Ideally, this is one goalkeeper and then two each of centre-back, full-back, midfielder, winger and striker. If it's not, don't worry, it's fine. I can imagine you playing some dodgy 2-1-2-1-2 formation or something daft like that, knowing you. But if you could give a reason for each player you give, that's absolutely fine. Anyone that's in the main team gets a vote. And that goes towards the main Files FC, which is all the podcasts combined, all their votes put together, and you can find that on the website. You can nominate some subs if you want to, but they don't get any votes towards the main team. They are just honourable mentions. So, starting with goalkeeper, away you go, please, Matt.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for Begovic. And it really was a toss-up between him and Sorensen. We've obviously been blessed with goalkeepers historically and over recent years as well. I think if you were forcing me to pick a goalkeeper for one match, I'd probably go Sorensen. But over the course of a season, I just think Begovic was that, just that notch. I don't know what it is. I just thought he made a difference when he came in and became number one. And over the course of the season, I think, yeah, he'd probably nail down the number one spot for me.
Yeah.
In terms of the back, I have to admit, I didn't know that it was a 4-4-2.
Oh, it doesn't matter if you haven't.
Yeah, because I don't think we've particularly been blessed with fullbacks.
We've had this a few times. Yeah, fullbacks is a really, really tricky one, to be fair.
So I was going to go for wingbacks.
Mm-hmm, that's fine.
But I'll start with the defenders and then get to that. Hoof, you know, you can't look past him, can you, really? Literally. Just an absolute Berlin Wall. Yeah, just a massive part of that era. Next to him, Shawcross. Again, it just didn't even need explaining. Club legend, definitely. Then next to him, Abdoulaye Faye as a third centre-back. Again, like going back to my first season as a Stoke fan, and that season he had was just unbelievable at the back. Full-backs, well, wing-backs. I'm being a bit controversial here, but I've got to sneak him in somewhere, so I'm going to have Delap as a right wing back. I seem to remember him playing some games for us at right mid, even though obviously more known as a kind of central midfielder. I just think actually he'd probably be quite perfect for that kind of wing back role. Because defensively was very good.
And of course he's nearer to the touchline then as well.
Exactly. he doesn't have to run over the touchline anymore. On the other side, this is a bit naughty really, but I've got to push him in again. Etherington.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Now, it sounds a bit ridiculous at first, but the amount of kind of running up and down the touchline he did and getting back and tracking back, he actually played as a wing-back for us for these years.
They all did, didn't they, on the Peelers, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, especially with those three at the back, how good those three were, I think they'd be fine with a player like Etherington just acting as a wing-back. So I'm having him there, controversial, although it may be.
Oh, I think that'll be all right. Don't worry. We've had worse than that. Don't worry.
Midfield, Nzonzi. In terms of a footballer, he has to be the best Stoke player I've seen. Just that different type of a player as well. I used to love getting to the games like early. So I could go out and see him kind of knock about with the squad in warm-ups and just watch like 10 players trying to get the ball off him. I'll see, just held them away and... Yeah, just a special player. Next to him, Whelan. Like I said, they lined up for most of Nzonzi's time there as well. I think they complemented each other quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, again, just another club legend. Then the three up front, it's caused me headaches. It has got to have Arnautović there, just for the kind of the way he developed and the player he became at Stoke. You think just over those kind of 2 or 3 years, he just turned into a really kind of just such a dangerous player.
Hmm.
And some of the stuff he did, you know, I think we'd probably been struggling earlier in the Premier League if he'd not been there.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously that year he was just massively missed. And just watching him celebrate assists, I could never get bored of
that crouch goal. I remember he crossed it from about 40 yards away.
Yeah.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, exactly. Up top, Fuller again, just absolute icon of a player, and especially during that kind of those first years in the Prem when I don't think we got that many goals, but obviously his were hugely important and they were good goals as well. You look back at that Villa one, it's just special. And I was hoping I'd have made my mind up by the time I got to the final.
Oh, you haven't? Mate.
I'm going to make... So it's between Bojan, just kind of shoehorning him in there, just off the forwards, or Walters. I'm going to have to go Walters.
Okay.
It hurts me to say, but Walters I'd go for. Yeah, again, just especially like the player he became, you know, you signed him, you didn't really know what to expect, and just the way he kind of developed and became, like, I don't think anyone expected that much of him, but to become the kind of legend and icon he became was testament to him, actually, and his, you know, his work ethic and what he was prepared to put in. And actually, I think, given them going for wing backs, I think, you know, he'll do his bit getting back, and
yes,
it hurts me to leave Bojan out, but that's my 11.
Well, I was going to say, if it hurts to leave Bojan out, you can name a couple of subs if you'd like.
Yeah, Bojan is in the first sub. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, just a big player in that kind of culture change within the club.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose what stands out about Bojan, not just how good of a player he was and seeing some of the special things he did, but he just loved being a Stoke player.
Yeah.
And that's just what all we want to see, isn't it, as fans? Someone that's just proud to be a Stoke player. Yeah, just got to go there. Get him in somewhere.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. You mentioned Sørensen as well. You may as well stick him in there as well.
Yeah, no, again, like you say, if you had to pick a goalkeeper for one game, a cup match or whatever it might be, just as a shot stopper.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, unbelievable. Obviously, penalties, make a lot about his penalties, but yeah, just general shot stopping.
Yeah.
I'd probably say better than Begovic in terms of that.
Yeah.
That's probably the only reason I don't have Sørensen in over Begovic. I just seem to remember Sørensen palming them back into the path of the striker.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd go as far to say, like, Sørensen was a more reliable goalkeeper, and you knew what you were getting from Sørensen. Like, he was a great shot stopper, as you say, great penalty stopper. You know the sort of typical mistakes that he would make, particularly palming him back into the area. Begovic would sort of pull off these wonderful saves. Like, was it that one against Liverpool where he sort of stopped the momentum with one hand and then he dropped it to the ball with the other hand mid-flight as he was going in the air, and you just think, what on earth, how have you saved that?
I was just having memories of Begovic just being that kind of little bit sharper, like he'd not only save the first one, he'd be up on his feet and getting that second one as well. But like I said, I don't know, it's probably really harsh, so yeah, sorry, I'm gonna go on that bench as well.
Yeah, anybody else in there? Or
I mean, there's lots, and that's really difficult. I'm trying to think more of who I've got soft spots for. I'll go Wilco, because I've not got any fullbacks, and that's harsh to Wilco. If he'd have put that one in at Wembley in the semi-final, he'd have been in there.
Oh, my God, yeah. We've mentioned that a couple of times, actually. Just it sort of taints that day for me just a tad. It's a 9.5 out of 10 just because of that, because could you have imagined 30,000 people flooding Wembley pitch.
I mean, it's probably a good thing it didn't happen.
I'm not sure so many people would have seen him there. But no, I'm glad you mentioned Wilco, because as you say, like, not having fullbacks is a tough decision, and I can see why you've made it. Like, lots of people haven't mentioned fullbacks. Yeah, like, Wilco's a good one to name in there, and as an honourable, I think.
Yeah.
And actually, all of those you mentioned, like, I think if I was to do my team one day, that's not too dissimilar from what I'd pick, you know, just because of the era that we grew up in, you know, the Premier League era of, it was that mixture between hard graft, particularly in the early days, and then, like, some of those players coming in later on, Arnautovic, and
yeah, and I think were good. That's probably what differentiates it from the kind of, the first wave after that kind of, you knew what you were getting, but then the first kind of players to come through under Hughes, they brought into what the club, you know, stood for, I think.
Hmm.
Obviously, you know, with Arnautovic, it ended badly, but, you know, he definitely, I think, brought into the club during his time here. Just looked excited to play for the club. Same with Bojan and Mineza. And it's a shame that, the kind of effort and research and players as people didn't continue. That's probably why we are where we are today.
Oh, undoubtedly. Like, Arnautovic, I still think it wasn't completely down to him. We know that his agent, his brother, had a lot to do with the way he moved. Like, well, I mean, he was no better to West Ham, was he, in the end, moving to China, and they're not happy with him there either. And
yeah, I'm not sure a lot of that would have happened had we, obviously, a lot's been made about the ambition comments, but, you know, we don't know what happened inside the club or what had been said before, but we do know in hindsight, you know, we'd not been particularly great for the perhaps a year, 18 months before he left, and he had rather single-handedly kept us going through games and seasons. Yeah. So we don't know what had gone on or what had been said, and if an arrangement could have been made to keep him, I don't think he'd have gone off the rails as much as he perhaps has.
No, I don't think so either. I think there was potential there for him to be a real Stoke great more than he is already, but just circumstances, unfortunately. But yeah, I like his character on the whole. In hindsight, I was very angry at Arnautovic, actually. So angry at Arnautovic.
I think we all were, I mean, I can't say I've had that many kind of Stoke heartbreaks in terms of players. We've normally not particularly had to sell many players.
Yeah.
Not on our own terms, you know what I mean? But, you know, Arnautovic and Nzonzi as well, I suppose.
Begovic maybe, but then we expected Begovic somewhat, didn't we?
So, they were tough moments, I'm leaving.
Okay, so let's move to sort of the final quarter of the podcast, as it were. This is you more now in the present day. And as you've touched on a couple of times before, you in the present day is actually now you in Manchester. You know, this is long after we were students together at school and college. We sort of went our own separate ways. Obviously, still keeping in touch and going to games. But from your point of view, now uni at Manchester, graduated, now working in Manchester.
Yeah.
And match days for you are looking different.
No, definitely. I really do look forward to match days still. It's getting to see everybody. I normally try and cram as much possible into, you know, going home. If I can get at home the night before and, you know, meet up with, you know, you and the lads in the pub, I'll do that. And then, you know, Saturday. So obviously since I moved to Manchester, it's been about obviously getting back and, you know, seeing family. And, you know, we park up at my granddad's and we walk down together with my granddad and auntie and my dad and brother and things. And yeah, it's that kind of thing that brings you back. Well, I've of course made time to come back if I didn't go, but it's easier, isn't it, when, you know, you've all got that thing, that kind of, it's all focused on the football and you can all go down together. Yeah, I do that and try and see other friends around the red ground. And I've actually got made friends with a mate from work who turned out to be a Stoke fan.
Okay.
And the thousands of people in the organisation, I think we found for the first week. So now we tend to get the train either down together or back together. Yeah, with a beer on the train and stuff. So yeah, I just try and cram as much into that kind of routine and see as many people as possible, really.
I've taken a similar path to you, albeit not in the same location. You know, uni, then working away from Stoke, it means more. Me having the season ticket with my dad, I'm forced to go to games with him, but whether I like it or not, of course, I've never disliked it, but you've got that reason to go back, you know, like, unless you really can't go, and you'll sympathise with this, sometimes you just can't make it, particularly midweek. Maybe you know that you're going to be getting back to your living city in half one, two in the morning. And
I've done that a few times this season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, it's nice to have the excuse to go back, and maybe you wouldn't have seen your friends and family otherwise. As you say, like, I'm sure you'd have made the effort at some point the same way that I would have done, but I certainly wouldn't have gone back quite as frequently had it not been for the football, having that set routine.
It's part of that date in the diary, and again, like you say, that routine. It's definitely probably the big reason why I maintaining that season ticket, especially as, you know, the football might have deteriorated. And nothing wrong with football. The football being bad, but it's been a bit soulless over the last couple of years. There's been frustrations around it, but when it comes to renew, it's not even in question, really. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna subject myself to another year of it.
Money down the drain, time down the drain, soul and anger down the drain.
Yeah, I think in a different city now, where people perhaps don't get it, or, you know, I speak to, you know, friends and colleagues who don't or aren't match going fans and just don't understand it. I thought, why do you do it to yourself when it practically ruins your weekend, most weekends? But, you know, like I say, it's...
You wouldn't miss it, would you?
No, definitely not.
Hey, I tell you what, you're going to love this segue. So we were talking about dates in the diary and stuff. We, of course, had a date in the diary. We were going to go to Preston. Was it Preston?
No, Wigan.
Beg your pardon. Wigan away. We were going to go to Wigan away. Us and a few of the lads as well. And I know some of your mates from up where you are as well. And I was going to I think I was going to meet some other Northwest-based Stoke fans up there as well. And then, of course, we had life cancelled for the year.
I'd had a number of away days planned.
Yeah.
And I was actually looking forward to them for the football. Now we're good again.
Yes, exactly.
I was planning Wigan and Leeds and Bristol. Again, all around, just seeing people and going to visit some uni mates and things. So, I've missed out on them, really. But obviously there's more kind of pressing matters at the moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lives come first, you know, the safety of other people obviously comes before sitting in a bar or a concourse drinking and watching football at the end of the day, in the long run, it matters a lot more that we're all safe and well, especially the footballers and the fans. We've all had to adapt. We've all adapted at home. Businesses have adapted. And of course, football and Stoke have had to adapt as well. How do you think Stoke have handled things?
Again, this goes back to that kind of point earlier in terms of they might not have always got things right, but I do believe the club's always got the right intentions, and I think throughout coronavirus it really excels in itself. Again, we know we're lucky to have the codes, and their response to this has been magnificent. Right from the very start, they didn't even need to be pressured into it.
No,
they came out, they made a commitment to staff, they made a commitment to the city, obviously both in terms of Bet365 and the club in general as well. And again, I think it just goes to that central point that we are really lucky to have them.
Like 100% we are. The amount of things they've done, and when other clubs who are much bigger than us and more prolific than us have been slandered in the press, like we've done ever so well, I think in every regard, that be with the fans, with the football coming back, and we've taken the right stance on a lot of good things.
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of we've all had frustrations with aspects of how the club's being run over the last kind of 2 or 3 years, and myself included. But this, I suppose, has proven that they've still got the right intention, even if they haven't always made the right decisions. So yeah, I think they've well earned a little bit of leeway from fans going forward, I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know what? You actually took the words pretty much right out of my mouth, so I'm glad you said that. Because I was just going to say that you mentioned that Stoke were getting better. You know, Michael O'Neill's magic has seemingly saved us from relegation. Touch wood, fingers crossed, all the good stuff. But I'd like to think that we're in a good position now. And a lot of fans were, anyway, before this pandemic, feeling better about Stoke. But, again, you mentioned it there, that we were very frustrated with how the club was run, whether that be on a footballing level with transfers or managerial decisions or off-the-field decisions. How many times have we spoke on this podcast about stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not happy with, like the lack of introduction of certain things or their stance on certain things? Or we can be very conservative, I think, with our investment in towards the fans' experience on a match day sometimes. But, well, I'll let you answer. How different do you feel about Stoke now compared to before football stopped?
I wouldn't necessarily feel that much different. Like, I think you're right in terms of the frustrations are real, and the good work that's been done doesn't negate some of those frustrations. In terms of some of it should have been better, mistakes should have been learned from.
Yeah.
But I do think it probably has given you the time to sit and reflect, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier, it doesn't really matter. And when you sit and reflect on the response, it does highlight we've got good people who want to run a club in the right way, even if they haven't always.
Yeah.
So I think that's massively important. Yeah. So I think that just that breathing space as well. But like I say, I think you were right. I think hopefully the club has started to learn, and the Michael O'Neill appointment looks to be working, and whatever kind of inspired that appointment. Because I mean, I was concerned about where they would go next after Jones, and whether Jones was them kind of experimenting and that was it, and the traditional kind of steady approach. But Michael O'Neill was, it wasn't a risk-free choice, and he's definitely paying back on that kind of chance.
Again, we don't really do sort of current events on this podcast, but I think it's sort of time ago now to say that I wasn't particularly thrilled with Michael O'Neill's appointment. Like, shoot me, he come from Shamrock Rovers and Northern Ireland. Like, I know Northern Ireland did very well and they reached the Euros, and I actually watched match day rewind actually of them against Ukraine in the Euros, and they won, and it was a properly good performance. And if we see a Stoke like that, they weren't particularly spellbinding, they weren't Stoke alone, but they were a good side. One that stood up to big players at the time, like Yarmolenko and Conor Pleyankas, players that we wanted to sign at that point. Northern Ireland more than held their own, and they weren't, they weren't anybody at that point.
No, exactly. I think, he's definitely, I personally like to split the squads in terms of this squad to the squad that got relegated. I'm not being that angry at the current squad. I don't think they're necessarily being bad people. Whereas, in the relegation squad, we did have some bad eggs.
Oh, yeah.
I think the current side has just suffered from a a cataclysmic, you know, failure of confidence.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for whatever reason, they just didn't grasp what Nathan Jones was trying to take them through.
Hmm.
Or, I mean, if they did, it was, you know, but it was just all based off, you know, mistakes that would, yeah, one mistake that would ruin a match, or two mistakes that would ruin an otherwise good performance. Whereas I think Michael O'Neill's just been able to strip it back to the very basics, and they're not bad players, and they're not bad professionals either. So I think they've probably thrived just under stripping everything back a little bit and just getting back to basics.
And you know what? Again, this sort of leads me on to one of my next questions, and it is one of the final ones, but I know that we've got a little bit to talk about over this one. We've touched on it on a number of times throughout the podcast, actually. Stoke's identity. What do you think it is?
Yeah, like you said, I think we have talked about it, but it's that kind of, it's definitely has to be grounded in kind of hard work and individuals, and in terms of, you know, individuals working hard, but as part of that team, you know, definitely, you know, you look back at the players that we've remembered and kind of immortalized, they're just being really good team players and really good people that have loved the area and loved the team. And I don't think that's, you know, the kind of all the same names often come up in terms of your Shawcrosses and your Whelans and your Walters. But, and that's right, you know, they've been their icons. But I don't think it has to be, you know, those same people either. I think, you know, we talked about it earlier in terms of, you know, your Bojans and your Menezes, who just loved to play for the club and really brought into what the club was about. So I suppose moving forward, you just need to do your homework on players and bring in those kind of characters. I think sometimes people perhaps think that that hard worker or grafter has to be a synonym for kind of English or Irish.
Yeah.
I don't buy into that.
Mm.
And I don't think they have to be like bad players either. I think you can have both. You can be flair and grafters.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And we've seen that with a number of players down Stoke, you know. Even Arnautovic wasn't necessarily defensively astute, like certainly at the start. I do think he got better. I do think you could see on the pitch, like you could see him sprinting back sometimes in his massive shorts, trying to make a last-ditch tackle. Okay, he wasn't always the best at them, but he genuinely did try, and he was a fantastic player too.
It. No, I agree.
But I agree with what you said also. Like, I think Stoke have had a tendency, and we spoke a little bit about this off-air actually, how Stoke have had a tendency over sort of Coates's reign actually to sort of managerial-wise especially bring in, and we've seen it from press, people like John Percy have said, like, Stoke have always preferred managers that have experience in that league and that are British. They don't tend to go for foreign managers, even when there's good options available. And even now, we've seen under sort of Rowett and Jones, out have gone the players who are of non-British nationalities, and the squad has turned into a squad of Brits. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing either. Like, wherever the hard work and the flair and the passion and the talent comes from, right, it doesn't matter. But that's almost sort of the point. I think, have we thrown the baby out with the bathwater somewhat? I don't know. I think we've got a good squad now, but it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think you might be right. There's a potential for that, isn't it? But I don't think it's necessarily home or abroad. I think it's just about doing your homework.
Yeah.
There was a clear process at that start a couple of years ago. We mentioned them before, but to go out and buy, almost get bargains abroad. And they all worked out reasonably well, most of those kind of signings.
Yeah.
And as that's been kind of slowly phased out, and you know, you're spending stupid money on players who you've not really done any research on, and that, you know, that could be, whether that's been British players or foreign players, that experiment's just not worked. I think you can get some real bargains both here and abroad if you're prepared to look for it and invest time into, you know, vetting people. You know, I mean, Pulis was always good at that.
Mm.
And hopefully Michael O'Neill can be too. I mean, just from rumours, I've seen he particularly likes the Scottish league, it looks like. So we might get some players from there in the summer. So we'll see. We'll see what he's like.
We'll see what it's like. I mean, we don't even know what's going on, when next season's going to be, whether there is a transfer window. Like, when you think about it, next season seems so far away. We've not even got this one out of the way. It's just such a bizarre situation we're in. I was asked actually the other day, who would we bring in? I haven't got a clue.
No,
and luckily that's not my job to think about, like, in an employee role or for this podcast. I don't even have to consider the future in any way, shape or form, but I really wouldn't know where to start.
No.
I don't really know what Stoke are at the moment, because I think we're still an established club with a good manager, good players and great facilities, great owners, and yet we're like relegation fodder in a way. And almost we're getting this, I think we're slowly gaining this reputation of making up the championship numbers if we're not careful. I don't know. We're a bit of an enigma at the moment. Who knows what's going to happen next season? Like,
let's get this these nine games out of the way first.
Yeah.
Which are definitely going to be interesting. And, you know, I was confident we'd be fine before. I mean, I think I liked with the last game, the 5-1 against Hull.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously we would be. We were on a high. You look at those nine games from a standing start, and you did get a little bit nervous. I think you'd like it all sorted before you have to play Leeds and Brentford and Nottingham Forest on the last couple of games.
Mm.
They'd be tough.
I hope we've got the ability and the confidence now to be able to sort of see this one through. Hull, I don't see any way for them. And then the bottom two, albeit one's changed the manager to obviously Nathan Jones. Barnsley, they might even have a better chance than Luton of staying up. I don't know. I'd like to think we're going to be okay. There's some teams down there with us that are not good enough, and hopefully we can plan for next season in the Championship again. And like I say, God knows what happens from then on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'll move us through the final questions then. So one of the questions that I tend to ask at the end, Zach, I don't know whether you know this or not, is if you had a chance to work at Stoke City, and that's in any capacity, and I know you'd love to be the number nine, the target man up front, like you are in Power League, where would you want to be?
Oh God, that's a tricky one. I mean, I've got my opinions, but I'm not even going to pretend I'd in terms of a manager role or anything to do with the football side of it. I'll stick to what I know and go somewhere with inside the club. I suppose so my background work-wise is kind of in PR and things, so I'd probably try and find myself a role there and hopefully help them out in that regard. I know it's the common thing to be quite angry at the way sometimes Stoke communicates with us or perhaps neglects that kind of match-going fan experience. So potentially something in terms of working with fans on that to improve that side of the club.
Yeah, I think so. Like, match day is really important, and I don't see a reason why there isn't a space within PR where match day can't be improved. You did mention managerial role. Now, I know this might be out of your remit of talent, but would you want to be the manager if you had the ability and the experience?
I'm not sure I'd want to be manager. I think it's a tough job at the best of times, but potentially something, I don't know, I'd probably prefer director of football or something in that regard rather than an actual manager taking the flak for it.
Do we have a director of football at the moment? I don't even know.
I think it's been a sore point, really, and probably why the club hasn't done its homework and research into, you know, players and leads, particularly well over the last few years, because you don't have that person in the club whose role specifically is to do rather than just focus on, you know, the next match. You know, a figure within the club to set a direction over the longer term and set some strategies out and
take the time
to go and research players and leagues. So potentially something like that, which would be more of a football side than my first suggestion. But
I think they're both decent suggestions, to be fair, and both areas that need filling anyway, I think. Anyway, so is there anything else you want to talk about? Is there anything I've missed? Anything you want to discuss? Any shout outs you want to give? Like, the stage is yours now, mate.
I'll give some shout-outs. I mentioned them before, but Joe and Rob and Sam and Stuart, who I went with for the first few years of being a Stoke fan, you know, they massively helped me with that, and tremendously grateful to them for that. Obviously, again, family and friends that have kept me in it, yourself, Ben, as well.
Mm.
Yeah, like I would say, my kind of Stoke experience has been about people, so everyone that's been on the journey with us, you know, I appreciate them.
I think that's a really nice way of putting it. Like, been that way for me, actually, as well. I don't know. I said, I don't know how much I'd have been into football had it not been for you or the other people that I was friends with at school, maybe, or my dad. You know, like, it all makes a big difference at the end of the day. And it's certainly not overlooked on this podcast, but I think generally it is overlooked how important people are to football. And it's why, at the moment, we're talking about fans not being there and match day not being the same. It's because it genuinely isn't. Like, you can't have that match day experience.
You have to actually watch the game now, aren't we?
Yeah, like, we can watch the game, but unless we do a Zoom call, what the hell are we going to do? Like, you can't go down the pub for a pint before the game. You can't moan about the game for 2 hours afterwards. You don't get the journey up to the new city. Oh, well, you can moan to Fran. I'm sure she'll love that.
She's very excited for the football so far.
Oh yeah, because it's on, like, not every other day, but maybe twice a week or something like that now, isn't it? I don't know what she's going to be doing. I don't know what my mum's going to be doing either, to be fair. She's going to be furious. But anyway, I've got one more question, mate. And actually, I didn't prompt you with this at the start. I don't know whether you know what this is or not. I'd like you to describe your Stoke City story in 3 words for the title, please, mate.
The Stoke family.
The Stoke family.
Yeah.
I just got that written down.
Yeah, I'll go with that one.
Yeah. The Stoke family is a nice one, actually, because the amount of memories and, well, why you're in it in the first place and why we're such good friends as we are, I think. Like,
yeah,
it's your second family, isn't it, in a way? And visiting it at 40, all right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And with that, I guess, that's closed file 30 of the YYY files. Firstly, thank you, Zach, ever so much for coming on and sharing your story. I know that you've not got a lot else to do at the moment, to be fair, so it wasn't that bad, but I've wanted you on for a while, genuinely, like, and it's really nice that you've actually come on and we've been able to talk about old times together, and hopefully it's not been too niche, too personal to us, and other people have enjoyed this as well. I'm sure they will. But yeah, thank you ever so much for coming on and talking about Stoke the way you have.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Ben. I've enjoyed it. I've been looking forward to coming on.
No, you're absolutely welcome. As I say, I'll and this is a slight on you, I'll take anybody. But on a serious note, I genuinely mean that. Like, this show relies on people like you listening as well to share your story too. If you want to appear on the YYY files like Zach and create your file, head to the website at theyyyfiles.com. Don't know how long lockdown's going to last for now, so if you've got the free time and you don't know when you're going back to work or whatever, I know some of you are at work and are well busy, and with the football coming back, you're going to be even busier. But hopefully with the football coming back and some of you relying on sort of remote platforms like this, I need people to interview at the end of the day. Like it doesn't take very long. Me and Zach were only talking about this the other day, and yes, we know each other, but it gets sorted out pretty quickly, and I have a lot of people who are on here and they don't think that their Stoke City story is good enough, but me and Zach are just friends and neither of us have done anything particularly special with Stoke City. I could just talking about old times, and if you want to do the same, like, this is absolutely the place to do it. I can understand that if you don't want to do that, but if you enjoy the file and you want to hear more, subscribe on your favourite podcast platform, go back and listen to the previous ones if you haven't already, but most importantly, tell your friends about the show. Massive deal. If you enjoyed listening, share the podcast as much as you can. Come and find us on social media at the YYY files, or send an email to the YYYfiles@mail.com. All those links are in the podcast description. That just leaves to say one more time, thanks, Zach.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much for listening. Until the next one. But don't forget, it could be your file one day. Visiting support you.
Pantomime.